This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, we're live and it's Friday, July 19th, 2019. If you want to call and talk to us, you can do that at 866-472-5788. 866-472-5788. If you're not listening live, that's cool. You can still leave a question or a comment about this show, any other show. You can do a sex advice question. Call us at 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. I have a returning guest on my show today, but she has the distinction of being one of my very first guests. We're looking it up now, exactly when she was, but she was in the first year of my show. So she was like in the first, one of the first like 20 episodes of my show, which is bananas. So I'm really excited to have her back because it's been a while. We need to kind of catch up. Audacia Ray is a former sex worker who currently serves her LGBTQ community as Director of Community Organizing and Public Advocacy at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. She spent 5 years as the founding executive director of the sex worker-led media, storytelling, and advocacy group, Red Umbrella Project. She co-authored the report, Individual Struggles, Widespread Injustice, Trans and Gender Nonconforming People's Experiences of Systematic Employment Discrimination in New York City, and Criminal, Victim, or Worker, Impacts of the Human Trafficking Intervention Courts on Adults Arrested on Prostitution-Related Offenses in New York. She is an editor of the anthology Spread, the best of the magazine that illuminated the sex industry and started a media revolution, among other things. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Audacia Ray.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so I'm being told that you were on the show on August 3rd, 2012. So it's literally 7 years ago. You were the ninth guest. You were the ninth guest on my show. And now you are on show 337. Wow. So we have a lot to catch up on. That's what I said. Because if you haven't gone back and listened to that, you should. But you wrote one of the first books about sex work that kind of broke out. It was called Naked on the Internet, Hookups, Downloads, and Cashing in on Internet Sexploration. That was way back in 2007. You were executive director of Spread magazine, which was a great sex worker magazine. And as I said in the intro, you've worked extensively with Red Umbrella Project as the founding executive director. So I guess my first question is, you've been in the trenches. You've been in the movement for sex worker activists and advocates. How do you think it's changed in, I think you've been in 15 plus years or more?
Yeah, it's true. 15 years. I mean, things have changed a lot, and also like some of the same conversations keep happening over and over again. I mean, one of the things that's really striking to me is that like even like 5-6 years ago, and certainly the last time I was on your show, I knew like literally everybody in the country who was doing, was like publicly out as a sex worker and doing sex worker activism. Like I could probably just like rattle off the names in like less than 2 minutes. And that's really, really changed in the past bunch of years. And now we have like, you know, at that time there was sort of this like older generation of sex worker activists, Carol Lee, also known as Scarlet Harlot, Annie Sprinkle, that whole like Club 90 group of feminist porn makers who were really active in the 80s and 90s in New York, yourself. And, you know, so there's this like slightly older generation. I feel like there are actually multiple generations of sex worker activists. And it's also really interesting to me that there are now like tons of different opinions about what liberation looks like for sex workers, how we accomplish it, what the goals even are. And I love that. It's so interesting now that there are so many different kinds of organizations. There are grassroots groups. There are groups that are like locally rooted in lots of different places around the country. A lot of them are in constant conflict with each other, you know, often in ways that are very fruitful and sometimes ways that are very harmful. But so there's lots of different approaches and opinions. And that's super fascinating to me, particularly because, you know, like I used to just be on like, you know, emails and blogs with everybody who was active in the country at the time. And now that's just actually impossible to do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, particularly like when I was at Spread, so Spread magazine, I got involved in that in 2004, which was the first year that I was doing sex work. And the magazine launched in the spring of 2005. And you know, things have really shifted since then in the fact that there are lots of different conversations, but also that project really like held space for a lot of folks to get involved in the movement at all. And it certainly was that for me. And at the time, like kind of the mission was illuminating the sex industry. That was the tagline of the magazine. And so like at the time, if folks asked me like what my goal was as a sex worker activist, I would usually say something like humanizing people who are sex workers, you know, so people know that we're people and we deserve rights. And that was kind of it. Like that was my first round of answering that question. And now there are a lot more nuanced answers to that question. And people ask different questions. So for me, like this year, particularly in like rolling out Decrim New York, the coalition to decriminalize, decarcerate, and destigmatize sex work in New York, I've been like sometimes surprised and even like taken off guard by when people ask more complicated questions. That it's like, and even with elected officials, it's like totally accepted that sex workers deserve rights. Like the end, sure, okay, let's move on to the next thing. That's been really interesting to see that shift.
Well, it's the sign of kind of the evolution of a movement, right? That people are asking better and more complicated questions, and that people have passed the kind of 101 stage that you no longer have to convince them. This is a marginalized group of people who have humanity and should have human rights.
Right. Yeah, and I know, you know, like I'm not really involved in sex positive activism anymore, but when I was doing both kind of alongside each other, the question that I was getting over and over again was like, is sex work or is porn empowering? And I just got to the point where I was like, oh my God, I don't care. I don't care about this question at all. And it's completely irrelevant to what we need to do. And yeah, I definitely remember, like, you know, particularly like around the time when Naked on the Internet came out, which was in 2007, that was a question that got asked a lot on my book tour and you know, all the press and stuff. You know, and then it was like really billed as being about female empowerment, which at the time I guess was exciting, but now I find super boring as a topic. And I'm really glad that that's not the conversation, the only conversation anymore.
Right. It's still in some circles a conversation. I mean, I've had that conversation and I've heard that conversation when sometimes people catch me off guard and I say, like, well, you know, some porn stars really like their jobs, and people will turn around and be like, what?
Oh my God.
And then I have taken for granted that, like, someone in the room is not sort of up to date on the complexity of sex workers and sex industries. But it's no, but you have a great long view of this, as you said. And I love that you said that, you know, the more voices you kind of get in the room, the more conflict, right? The more different ideas, which can be a strength, but also can then get divisive and cracks can happen. And I feel like that's also kind of a growing pain of a movement that is sort of coming to the fore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, for like me personally, and for the work in New York, and this, you know, this has definitely happened nationally, though I'm less familiar with what's happening all over the country. But like for me in particular, like my first sort of cohort of sex workers that I organized with were all a lot like me. Like they were middle class, cis, white women who had a variety of experiences in the sex industry. So like I went in assuming that everybody was like happy as a sex worker and like hadn't been violently assaulted, which was completely wrong. But, you know, but we had this like shared like class and racial and gender identity kind of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And it took me a couple years to like start to get a reckoning myself and within the movement about like the ways that sex workers who look like me uphold white supremacy and trans misogyny. And like fucked up class dynamics and like, you know, like co-hierarchy stuff. And so that for me has been like a big part of the journey over the past decade, really, of figuring out like, you know, cool, I'm working for the rights of sex workers, but am I actually working for the rights of all sex workers? Am I actually including marginalized voices? Am I actually shutting up and getting out of the way when I don't know what I'm talking about? And that's become very important to my activism as these 15 years have gone on.
Okay, that's a great, great place to stop because we've got to take a break and hear from our great sponsors, including the Pleasure Chest, where you should go right now and get yourself something nice. They're having their BOGO, buy one, get one off. No, buy one, get one 50% off, anything that vibrates, all month of July, which is exciting. There's so much to talk about more about sex work, about decriminalization, what it is and why it matters, how everyday people can help out, what the effort looks like in New York City. So stay with us more with Audacia Ray when we get back. It's July, which means it is the one and only sale of the year at the Pleasure Chest, in store and online. It's BOGO. Buy one, get one half off anything that vibrates of equal or lesser value. Have your eye on a luxury vibe. These things do not go on sale, people. Maybe you want to try a vibrating butt plug. Maybe your magic wand is about to kind of kick it. Not to worry, BOGO is the perfect time to restock or upgrade your toolbox. You need to invest in pleasure for yourself, for a lover, for a friend, for a partner, or really just to treat yourself. This sale goes on for the entire month of July. It excludes Crave and Pleasure Chest kits. It's not available to combine with any other offers or promotions. Visit pleasurechest.com and get your vibe on.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javi and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent, ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way. I can go there and come there too. There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for The Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I do want to hear from you. And because we're live, I could hear from you right this very second. You can call us at 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. My guest today is Audacia Ray, who is Director of Community Organizing and Public Advocacy at the New York City Anti-Violence Project. So we're going to talk about these decriminalization efforts in New York. I want a little bit of background because there is, although you said, you know, lots of people are can't necessarily agree on kind of one agenda, but there is a move by a lot of sex workers to decriminalize sex work instead of like making it legal. And so I wonder if you'll just tease out what the differences are there.
Sure. So I will also say that like my opinion and analysis of this doesn't totally match with some of the conversations that's happening right now. And so there's like a lot of I think there's a lot of work to be done about like what we're actually talking about. So decriminalization is a framework that basically says that having the labor of being a sex worker criminalized is a source of harm and is violence. So interactions with police are violence. Interactions with court systems are violence. Being forced to have like services and an alternative to incarceration kind of situation is violence. And all of those kind of scenarios create a space that harbors and creates violence that comes from clients and partners and members of the public, neighbors, landlords, other folks that people in the sex trades interact with. And so the decriminalization model says all that is violence. The way to end the violence is to decriminalize sex work so that we can create an environment where people are workers and not criminals. The sort of standard way that decriminalization and legalization are pitted against each other says that decriminalization basically strips away all of the bad laws, and that includes decriminalizing people who are working in the sex trades, sex workers who are supporting each other, so as co-workers and also managers, and it also decriminalizes people who are clients in the sex trade. So it includes workers, managers, and clients. And legalization is a system in which the workers are decriminalized, but highly regulated. So, like, the example of that in the United States is in Nevada. So folks think that, like, prostitution is totally legal. You can do whatever you want anywhere in Nevada. But actually, the way that they legalize prostitution is that sex work is legal only in brothels in counties that have populations of less than 400,000 people. So it's not legal in Vegas. It's not legal to be an independent worker. And you have to go and, like, get tested regularly and register with the state and work at some of these very particular brothels. And the brothels themselves have a lot of controls and standards. So they, like, basically only hire, like, skinny white cis women. That's the only way that you can work legally in Nevada. So the like short way of thinking about it is, like, decriminalization strips away the bad laws. Legalization introduces very restrictive regulations that actually, like, still keep a lot of people criminalized.
Right. So still keep, well, and don't give everyone access to even doing the job legally.
Right. Exactly. And so, but what's complicated here is that, I believe that there is no likelihood that in the United States that we are going to be able to strip away all the bad laws and replace them with nothing. Because the sex industry involves health, personal touch, is a service industry, all those things, I think that we'll not just be able to be like, leave us the hell alone. This is an unregulated industry. We're just going to do what we want. And so that what we need to do is both the first thing has to be decriminalization, stripping away all the bad laws that harm people directly and create an environment in which people can be harmed further. And then we have to think about what is the proactive thing that we actually want. And it's been interesting because I feel like for most of my advocacy career, I have been able to like list out all the things that we don't want and that need to go away to make our lives better. But having to come up with the proactive vision of what does it actually look like for people to have access to the resources they need and not have to interact with police if they don't want to, maybe not have the police exist at all, not have prisons exist, et cetera, et cetera. Like, what does that actually look like? And so that is really important to figure out, like, that piece of it. And it's still a very big question. And I also don't think that, like, the existing regulatory bodies are going to come up with good answers. People who are directly impacted by criminalization have to be the ones that come up with solutions. And so that's really important. And so it's yes, decriminalize, but then, you know, the other pieces of how we talk about Decrim New York is decriminalize, decarcerate, destigmatize. And then what is the positive vision of what workers' rights look like in different sectors of the sex industry?
So we saw this idea of kind of regulation by the government. We saw that play out in California first several kinds of ballot measures were on the ballot. And the one that has passed and is now law is around condom use. People think of it as like the condom law, but actually when you read it, there's all of these really bizarre regulations around how to like conduct a porn set. And it doesn't just involve condom use. It actually involves like hazmat bags and taking toys that have been used and throwing them out in hazardous waste bags and like some weird stuff from OSHA as if like all bodily fluids were just like some chemical gas that could kill you. which they're not. And so I've seen that firsthand, kind of what happens when the government does step in. And of course, dozens and dozens and dozens of sex workers show up to every city council meeting and every meeting there is, and no one will listen to a word they say. So essentially, it is crafted, the legislation, by people who aren't current or former sex workers and like know nothing about how shooting a porn movie works.
Yeah.
So that's the fear in if we're gonna say it's legal, then it's like all of this other stuff falls into place that essentially doesn't make sense because there are no sex workers behind even talking about what their work experiences are and what they need.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and also like regulatory frameworks are used to try to regulate businesses out of existence. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we see that with like restrictions around clinics that offer abortion care all over the country, you know, down to things like, oh, your hallway has to be this width, which is like a way of disguising like, cool, your entire building is not possible for this right. use anymore, so you have to close. So like that's totally a thing. Like we're, you know, and just because of like the way the whole system works, like we're not gonna win decrim and then be like, cool, we did it. High five everybody, let's go have cocktails and it's over. Like it is an ongoing fight. Yeah. And, you know, and I think like we have to, knowing that this is a long game and that we have to work to ensure that sex workers are in positions where they can inform that policy is really important. And also sometimes we're going to lose. And how do we talk about that long term and like preserve the like the historical memory of how these movements have functioned and try to like keep fighting for the living and honoring the people we lose.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take another break. Coming back, we're going to talk about specific efforts that are happening in New York. And I'm going to ask the question, why New York? Even though I'm a New Yorker and I love New York, so I know the answer. Let's take a break, hear these commercials, and we will be back in about a minute. Low libido, a waning sex drive, trouble with arousal, trouble with orgasm. I don't know how many times we've talked about these issues on the show, and it's because they're really common, especially for women. How to deal with these issues? It's complicated, which is why when they tried to create a Viagra for women, it didn't work. And as I've gotten older, my own desire and arousal process has changed dramatically. I've tried my fair share of these so-called arousal gels, and I never know what the big deal is. Omax sent me their O-Shot CBD arousal oil to try out. It contains 8 natural botanicals and full-spectrum CBD. I put a few pumps of it onto the external part of the clitoris and labia, and immediately I felt a kind of tingling sensation, which lasted for about an hour. But beyond tingling, it can increase stimulation, circulation, arousal, and lubrication. We know that CBD increases relaxation, blood flow, and euphoric sensations, and that in turn can increase your arousal and orgasmic response. Omax Health is offering my listeners 20% off O-Shot plus free shipping. This discount applies to any product site-wide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today. Enter code Tristan20 to take advantage. This is omaxhealth.com. Enter code Tristan20 to get 20% off.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking about the efforts to decriminalize sex work with an expert in the field, Audacia Ray. So before the break, I said, why New York? And what I mean by that question is, what do you think has shifted specifically to create an environment in which it seems like there is tremendous progress being made? I mean, there's a bill that's been written, right?
Yeah, there sure is. I mean, really, like, Fosta Sesta really ignited a lot of these local, state and local organizing efforts.
A brief recap of Fosta Sesta. We talked about it on the show, but just in case this is someone's first show.
So Fosta Sesta is a federal piece of legislation that was signed into law in April 2018. Further restricts and criminalizes online platforms that may potentially be used for sex trafficking. So it means that, previously, like if you were using the internet to force someone into sex work, that's a crime. But now the actual website, the actual platform is criminalized for the possibility that coercion into the sex trade could happen on their platform. So it means that lots of online spaces, not just advertising spaces, but spaces where sex workers talk to each other, are, shutting down, like, preemptively before they deal with lawsuits. You know, Craigslist shut down its entire, not just, like, place where the people were trading sex, but like all of its personals. Mm-hmm. And it has like really wide reaching impacts for what it can do to free speech on the internet.
Go ahead.
So basically, like, after that, while that was happening, a lot of sex workers around the country were like, oh shit. It's interesting because, like, for me, I came of age as a sex worker on the internet in the aughts, when sex work and using the internet for sex work was becoming like really fairly rampant, but also still sort of under the radar. So there were news cycles like sex workers use Facebook, like those were actual news headlines during the time.
Right.
And now it's like, yeah, no shit. And so the, like, legislation and, like, concerned citizens of America have caught up with that information and are now trying to, like, shut it the hell down. That also means that, like, the generation of sex workers who became sex workers in, like, the 2010s, had access to all these different online tools that now are being threatened and eliminated. It is a very scary time to be a sex worker who uses the internet. And also at the same time, for sex workers who either have been sex workers a long time, or for sex workers who were always already experiencing very active, harsh criminalization. So particularly Black femmes, trans women, people who are undocumented, we're already all experiencing really intense criminalization. And so there's this interesting way that it's like, note to white internet hookers, like, this is getting scary and has been for other people for a long time.
That's a fascinating analysis about it, by the way, that it sort of had to, like, it had to dribble up, right? And then people sort of took notice, which is kind of what happens under white supremacy, is until it's like why all these white women vote for Trump, quite frankly. It's like until they feel personally affected by it, they're like, this is the way to go. Or they don't think of it at all, right?
Right.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So in New York, there have been like many waves of sex worker organizing in New York. And the last wave, I kind of crumbled and had like a lot of internal ugliness in like 2015, 2016. And a lot of the like grassroots groups sort of disbanded. Some of the like larger organizations that were like funded by 501c3s had like really tough stuff going on, and like people left the city, people moved back from the work, and some of the work dissipated. Since Fosta Sesta, a lot of us kind of came back together and were like, all right, what's up? What are we doing? And a lot of that is also not just about New York, but about like, okay, this terrible thing happened at the federal level. There are lots of terrible things happening at the federal level constantly all the time. And it has really like motivated folks at the city and state level to like learn politics, learn the process, and see what you can shift. So in New York State, for example, for last year, there was this like major upheaval in the state assembly, which has been like weirdly Republican controlled for like 30 years. Like maybe people think of New York as this progressive wonderland, and like our laws are terrible and a lot of, and especially around criminal legal systems. And also like the state government is like entrenched with shitty men in power and like deeply corrupt and messed up. And so last year folks like kind of looked at it and were like, oh, the Senate there, you know, there's two houses in the state legislature. This, the assembly is always a progressive one. The Senate is like Republican controlled in a weird way, which is that like by a numbers count, the Democrats are in power. But actually there was this group called the Independent Democratic Caucus that was this group of eight Democrats who voted with the Republicans. So, or people or started organizing, got together and were like, these motherfuckers have got to go. And all but one of them lost their seats and were replaced by super progressive folks, including a couple of folks who actively campaigned, including sex workers. One is named Senator Julia Salazar. Like, sex workers actually door knocked and canvassed for her. And she, from Go, said sex work should be decriminalized. Sex workers are part of progressive politics. There's another senator, Jessica Ramos, who's from Queens, who also has been super outspoken, super active in this process, you know, and talks about sex workers as her neighbors. And that's, you know, it's been this like, you know, blue wave thing happening, and sex workers have been part of making that happen. And folks, so we're now more of like an actual block that people need to answer to in New York. And we've done that very intentionally over the past year since Sosta Sesta.
And do you think it's ultimately going to happen on the local level? Do you think that sort of there needs to be state organizing because they're, this probably won't ever be decriminalized, or it won't be decriminalized federally under our current administration?
So to be clear, FOSTA SESTA would have passed under Obama if it had been put forward. Absolutely. Like, you know, with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, who led a lot of like anti-trafficking stuff, like as soon as you invoke anti-trafficking, everybody's on board. Everyone feels bad for, you know, this like imagined vision of these poor little girls, like the whole thing. FOSTA SESTA absolutely would have passed under a Democratic president, no question about it. A president cannot decriminalize sex work because sex work is criminalized at the state level because it's part of the criminal code, and all states determine criminal code independently. You know, like each state determines their own criminal code. And it also means that the criminal code and like anti-sex work laws look slightly different and are called different things in different states. But also beyond the laws, there's like tons of ways that a county and a city can shape what actually happens to sex workers in their municipality, regardless of what the state law is. So there are lots of ways to fight, both to change laws and then to change like policy and practice and social services and the way the courts function. The list is long. And so it means that there are both like lots of ways, like your examples of how porn is being regulated in California. So there are lots of ways that it can get totally screwed up. But it also means that once you hit a wall, you can pivot to something else and say, okay, how else do we win? And that's something that's super interesting to me about advocacy, because like the system is built both to have like infinite loopholes and infinite blocks and infinite ways to make our lives terrible. But it also means there's lots of opportunities to shift things a little. And that can be really valuable for folks.
So for example, if you get the ear of a DA who says, I am going to put this as the last priority on my list is prosecuting sex workers, or anyone who works in the police department who says, like, this is not the priority for me, arresting sex workers and harassing them. Is that kind of the stuff you mean? Like, so even if the law's on the books, the people in power can make decisions around if they're going to enforce those laws and if they're going to prioritize those laws.
Yes. And actually, what's interesting, like historically, the way that we in the sex worker movement use the word decriminalization is actually different than it's the way it's used in drug policy. So like one of our main champions in the state assembly is an assembly member named Richard Gottfried. He's been an assembly member since the 70s, and he was like the main proponent of the marijuana legalization, decriminalization stuff. Starting in the 70s, he's been working on it for a long time. And so when we first started having conversations with him about this, he was like, you know, decriminalization actually in the drug policy world has meant that police and DAs stop arresting and prosecution, but it doesn't mean like law change on the state level. And so it's interesting because like the sex work decrim movement uses the word in a different way. And that's something we'll probably come up occasionally. And it's like, I don't know. It's like, it's like a nerdy policy thing, but could also become significant at some point. But it means that like the police and prosecutors could choose not to do it. And sometimes those things compete against each other. Like in Manhattan, the DA's office has a human trafficking unit and they have decided not to prosecute misdemeanor. So misdemeanor prostitution and misdemeanor loitering for the purposes of prostitution. So if cops arrest people for those, they're like, whatever, and they throw it out. They don't prosecute them. So it has had the impact that police are not really making those arrests in Manhattan, one of five boroughs in New York City. But it has an impact. And it's a way that we can show, okay, so if this major, major borough in New York City is not arresting on these two charges and the sky has not fallen, like maybe it's fine, actually.
Right. Okay. We're going to take another break. This is also fascinating. I have 700 more questions, but that's not going to be possible because we only have one more segment. Before we go to break, let me tell you that there are these exciting mixers happening at the Pleasure Chest, July 25th in Chicago and August 1st in LA. Hashtag Open, which is a sex positive, inclusive, diverse dating app, is hosting these social events. You can get refreshments. There'll be discussion about relationships. There'll be icebreakers. You'll be socializing. The Chicago one is going to be hosted by sex educator Sarah Sloan. The LA one is going to be hosted by the dating advice girl herself, Erin Tillman. And it's going to be open. It's going to be multi-gendered. I'm going to put dating in quotes because it's anyone who's looking to connect with anyone else, including folks who are in non-traditional relationships. So you can go to pleasurechest.com, click on events, and check those out if you're in those cities. And we will be back with Audacia Ray in a minute. It's July, which means it is the one and only sale of the year at the Pleasure Chest, in store and online. It's BOGO. Buy one, get one half off anything that vibrates of equal or lesser value. Have your eye on a luxury vibe. These things do not go on sale, people. Maybe you want to try a vibrating butt plug. Maybe your magic wand is about to kind of kick it. Not to worry, BOGO is the perfect time to restock or upgrade your toolbox. You need to invest in pleasure for yourself, for a lover, for a friend, for a partner, or really just to treat yourself. This sale goes on for the entire month of July. It excludes Crave and Pleasure Chest kits.
kits. It's not available to combine with any other offers or promotions. Visit pleasurechest.com and get your vibe on. Hi, everyone. It's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My Sex Educator Bootcamp training programs, level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today's the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking to Audacia Ray about decriminalizing sex work. And so you are involved with Decrim New York's Stop Violence in the Sex Trades Act, which is the actual bill. Tell me more about that.
So the Stop Violence in the Sex Trades Act was introduced on June 11th. It is the most comprehensive state-level bill that decriminalizes sex work in the country. There's also a bill in Washington, D.C., that does very similar things that was introduced last year and reintroduced this year. So that exists at the city level. And D.C. is like one of the only cities that could actually decriminalize sex work and like get rid of the laws, because D.C. is not, there's no state. It's, you know, so it like the city itself is where all the laws are held. So it could actually decriminalize sex work. But at the state level, New York has this most expansive way of doing this. So basically, like, the way that this came together is that as Decrim New York started assembling, like, we started coming together last spring. I came together with Cecilia Gentili, who at the time was working for the Gay Men's Health Crisis and is this amazing Argentinian trans woman who I've known for many years. Yeah, we just had this like cab ride where we're like, okay, what are we doing? We're going to decriminalize sex work, right? Let's figure out how to do it. And so we started putting together this coalition, which now has 30 different organizations involved. The like dozen people on the steering committee are it's 100% LGBTQ leadership. Most people are sex workers or former sex workers or survivors of trafficking. And so over the winter, with some help of some lawyers, we went through and made a list of every anti-prostitution statute in the state of New York. It turns out there's like 24 of them. And so we did this kind of bananas exercise where we like put every law on a piece of paper. We did this like big chart on the wall and like charted out like what is the easiest to get rid of, what's the hardest, what would make the most impact, what would make the least impact. And so we made this like big chart and we did this power mapping to figure out what would we move, how would we move it. And so we initially were talking about like, okay, so there's like 4 or 5 of these that are like relatively easy to decriminalize, but if we do that, we'll never win the other stuff. So we started envisioning like, what would the big bill that pulls all these things together, this like big package that would substantially rewrite the anti-prostitution code in New York State? And that became the Stop Violence in the Sex Trades Act. So basically how we framed it is that it amends several statutes in New York State so that consenting adults who trade sex, folks who collaborate with or support people who are trading sex, and people who patronize adult sex workers will not be criminalized. And then, you know, as we dug into it, so there's 24 different pieces of anti-prostitution law. The bill repeals 4 of the laws completely. And they're like mostly misdemeanors that include a mix of prostitution and what's referred to as promoting prostitution, which like the anti-trafficking, anti-sex work people refer to as pimping, which, by the way, is a racist trope. So it is, you know, used to like conjure up this idea of this like predatory black man. But actually, like, there are a lot of different kinds of laws that criminalize promoting someone else doing sex work. And 2 of them are about peers working together. So it means, like, if you answer the phone and screen clients for a sex worker, that currently is criminalized as promoting prostitution. If you loan your car to a sex worker, that's criminalized as promoting prostitution. So, and if you like are co-workers, 2 sex workers working together, you can be charged with promoting prostitution of your peer, your friend, your co-worker. And then there are all these other pieces of the law that criminalize actual exploitation. So being a co-worker with somebody is not exploitation, and like being a manager often is not exploitation. But we know that in the sex trades, like in literally every other business in the world, managers can be terrible and exploitative, and they can abuse people, they can sexually harass people, and those folks should be held accountable. So our bill carves out, like leaves alone actually like a significant number of pieces of anti-prostitution or anti-trafficking statutes, anti-exploitation statutes, so that people who exploit and harm sex workers in the workplace as clients can still be held accountable. So that's really important. And like the current laws really like flatten all that. So it says that any like promoting prostitution is exploitation. And we just know that that's not true. And so that's a really important thing. And it's also important to decriminalize patronizing prostitute being a client. Because without that, it means that workplaces are still criminalized, and it means that workers are still unsafe. Clients will do scary things to protect their own identity and prevent themselves from getting arrested, and that can have scary consequences for everyone in the sex trades. And furthermore, the like arresting clients has in New York and lots of other places historically been used as a way of criminalizing gay sex, particularly among gay men, sex in public places, and like pickups in bookstores and other places like hookups in parks and stuff like that. Like folks often get arrested for patronizing a prostitute when they're like just hooking up with somebody. So the law is also very homophobic in that way and has been used for homophobic purposes. And so that's an important piece to look at as well. And so that's some of the stuff that the bill takes apart. The other things that it does is that it would create the option for sex workers to who've previously been convicted to be able to clear their records. And that's really important because like we're both looking forward and looking back. And this is happening in the like marijuana legalization and decarceration work too, where it's like, oh, we can't just like decriminalize, legalize, and like let people have their jobs while other people sit in prison forever. So the bill has that piece also. And that's really important. And then it also amends a bunch of statutes that have to do with like workspaces and stuff like that. So basically makes it so that sex workers can work as though sex work is a job. Imagine that. And there's like lots of little ways that we did that in the law, including like striking places where there's references to bawdy houses or houses of ill repute, like antiquated language that were striking from the law. So there's like lots and lots of moving pieces to it. And it's very complicated. And we also have thought really, really carefully about the ways to continue to protect people who are actually being exploited. And that, you know, so we're not like striking all 24 of the laws. We're striking four and clearly amending like three specific prostitution laws, and then amending lots of parts of the, like, I don't know, like the housing law, public health law, stuff like that.
I feel like these are really important distinctions to make, because people do like think, wait, if you're pro decriminalization, does that mean like you don't want the trafficking laws on the books? And of course, like, that's not what you're talking about. You do want to prevent exploitation, and you also want to make consensual sex workers safer and free of harassment by the police and free of criminalization. This has just been so comprehensive. I wish we could talk for another 2 hours, but we can't. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and I want to tell people how they can find and support you. The organization you work for, the Anti-Violence Project, is avp.org. The sort of task force is decrimnewyorkny.org. You are at audaciaray.com, and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at audaciaray. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. The show will be part one of two of the giant mega crossover episode of Sex Out Loud and Life on the Swing Set, recorded live at the Pleasure Chest in Chicago. Until then, I'm at Tristan Taramino across all social media platforms.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.